You're at home or traveling with the sound of Monitor Music and Mason Williams Orchestra playing Baroque, a Nova. Action is every weekend everywhere. Brad Crandall here. Mother Nature is now unveiling one of her most glorious free shows of the entire year, the Fall Foliage. Monitor hears all about where, when, and how in a matter of minutes. Here's the way Bobby Scott sings Star.
If the lady's naughty but proper, if the lady's chicer than chic, if her escorts must wear a topper, and each man's the man of the week. If she rides around in a brand new foreign car, the chances are the lady's a star. If the lady's brilliantly witty, if she makes the dialogue flash, if the lady's waved with a ditty, makes the ditty seem like a smash. If her songs add up to a fancy repertoire, the chances are a lady star. If the lady's someone with the same credentials, someone who is worshipped from afar, she's a genuine, positive.
At this time of year, many sections of the country undergo dramatic and beautiful changes in the landscape. Especially in the Northeast, the fall foliage throws a blaze of brilliant colors across the hills and valleys in breathtaking fashion. What causes the leaves to turn? Where and when is the best time to view Mother Nature's annual show? For the answers, listen to a chat between Dick Cleaver, Science Center Director, and Monitor reporter Ron Pabuda in Worcester, Massachusetts.
We're curious to know, Dick, what it will be like this year here in our part of the country. Ron, we're looking forward to a spectacular display. This year, we've had a fairly dry summer, but earlier in the season, we had a good growing season, and the rains have now come back to us, so the trees are in good shape. With the right conditions following, we should have a spectacular display.
In relation to other years, a good one?
I would think it would be a very good one. Of course, it's all going to depend on weather conditions from here on in. You know, there are three things needed, really, for good fall foliage. First of all, you have to have trees that drop their leaves, the deciduous trees. Then, of course, you've got to have cool, frosty nights. Now, frost is not absolutely necessary, but it helps to make a spectacular display. And then, of course, you've got to have good, sunny days during the daytime. You know, the color is in these trees all year round. That is, all summer long. You normally look at a tree and it's got green leaves on it, but you don't realize that the tree itself or the leaves themselves inside actually have all of these brilliant colors, the oranges and the reds and the gold, but they're all masked by chlorophyll cells. Now, nature has a spectacular way of knowing that wounds are going to occur, and she has a way of healing these wounds before they actually do occur. So as the sunshine becomes less and less, the days shorten up, the trees, knowing full well that the leaves are going to fall off, develop two layers of cork cells. One where the leaf is going to break off on the tree and the other on the leaf itself. This stops the flow of all the food that keeps that leaf alive. Now, the chlorophyll cells die off first. And as soon as they die off, they lose their green color and become transparent. Then all of the colors that were in the leaves start to show through. And, of course, they last for about 2 weeks before they finally die off and turn brown or the leaf itself drops. So you have a two-week period, which is really spectacular.
Dick, why is fall color here in New England better than anywhere else in the United States?
Well, as a matter of fact, you can enlarge upon that. It's better than anywhere in the world. We have an area in the northeast section of our country which runs from, western New York State, a little bit out into Ohio, Pennsylvania, on up in through New England. And, of course, New England is even more spectacular. The reason being that you get into other parts of the country, they have different types of trees. First, they may have the type of trees that don't drop their leaves, mostly the evergreen trees. Or the season might be too long, and therefore the trees don't drop their leaves all at one time. Or they don't have these cool, frosty nights that cause these cork layers to grow. So you've got a variety of reasons. Then, of course, you add the hilly area of New England, and this is what makes it spectacular. You get into central New York State, where it's flat, and they have all the color there, but you can only see a little bit of it at once. Now imagine getting up on a hillside and seeing a tremendous panorama of all of these colors mixed. This is what makes it so beautiful.
Dick, the fall foliage season here in New England, of course, is a big tourist attraction, and I'm sure people around the country would be curious to know what the best times would be to see the foliage here in New England, and the specific places, for that matter.
Well, it runs over a three-week period anyway, Ron. It usually starts in northern New England, up in the mountainous areas of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. About the last week in September is when it really starts out. Then it reaches a peak here in central New England about the 9th, of October. And down in southern New England, along the coast, it usually drags on until about the 15th to the 20th.
Our guest, Mr. Richard Kleber, director of the new Worcester Science Center in Worcester, Massachusetts, talking to us about fall foliage here in the fall of 1968. For Monitor, Ron Fabuta.
Jimmy Rosselli sings one of his latest, You Are Mine.
Joy.
week's newest trends in the office, the dance break. It's true. A dance break replaces the regular coffee break in a Cleveland office. The gals got permission, brought in a dance instructor, and voila, a 10-minute lesson on new steps like the filly and the skate. Four other offices are considering the same move. Talk about shaking up the office. How do you unwind after 10 minutes of violent hip flipping? You know, a few slip discs is all it's going to take, and coffee will make a comeback. Monitor music directly ahead, so stay on the Monitor Beacon.
Peddling candy is kid stuff. A health agency shouldn't have to do it. But the Kidney Foundation of New York is dedicated to helping people with kidney disorders get well, and they need the money. So they're selling candy, trick-or-treat candy, for $1. It's good candy, too, about 100 pieces in Halloween hand puppet bags that the kids can play with when the candy is gone. It's hard to believe that people are dying simply because there's not enough money to expand medical programs, and the doctors have to decide who shall live and who shall die because there's not enough money. It's a grim situation, and the Kidney Foundation will do anything to change it. So they're selling candy. Buy your Halloween candy from a Kidney Foundation volunteer, won't you? Your dollar will help you so much.
Monitor music by Paul Moriarty's orchestra, Eleanor Rigby. Remember, you'll go around the world starting Friday morning with NBC Radio's coverage of the first manned Apollo 7 launch with three astronauts aboard. Richard Flugelknight's playing Young Girl. Next, the most talked about woman on Wall Street, Wilma Soss, and her pocketbook edition of the news.
Thank you. You heard it first on Pocketbook News the week after Labor Day when I called it a Nixon stock market after the political polls pointed to a change of administration in November. The economic indicators taken alone weren't all that good. This week, everybody got on the bandwagon. When stocks climbed to their second highest level in 2 years, the New York Times reported they were buoyed by the new Wall Street battle cry of a Nixon stock market. The laggard blue chip average soared to its highest level since the spring of 1966. On Thursday, over 21 million shares were traded, the second busiest day in the New York Stock Exchange history. The big board saw 161 new highs versus 5 new lows. Weakness in the bond markets indicated a lot of switching into stocks. The institutions were apparently in there, buying heavily. Although, for 28 straight days, the less than 100 shareholders, odd lotters, have been on the sell side. That is how Wall Street, ebulliently, with the emphasis on the bulls, reacted to Richard Nixon's privately circulated position paper on the securities market. It may be the first chink in his political armor. That paper, blasted by Senator McIntyre in the congressional record as a secret memorandum, indicates government regulation of Wall Street would be relaxed if Mr. Nixon is elected President of the United States. Ordinarily, such policy papers are released to the press at the same time that they are privately distributed. Instead, Mr. Nixon's pledge was reportedly contained in a letter to selected members of the security industry and related businesses. The letter was not made public, according to a top economic advisor of Mr. Nixon, because it covered a narrow policy area. An area, incidentally, that affects 23 million shareholders plus millions of mutual fund holders in a $38 billion industry and a population of 100 million more who, as Mr. Nixon himself pointed out in his letter, directly or indirectly benefit from stock investments by way of pension plans or insurance policies. The Nixon letter, which found its way into the New York Times, stirred up something of a hornet's nest, for one thing. It was sent out at a time when the major presidential candidates are fundraising. A first priority of my administration, Mr. Nixon wrote, will be an independent study of financial institutions and requirements for investor protection. A similar study has already been authorized by Congress, but under the SEC, with the cooperation of the security industry. The Wall Street Journal notes that Mr. Nixon concentrates his attack on proposals by the Securities and Exchange Commission to revise the current stock brokerage rate structure and reduce certain mutual fund industry fees. This statement generally, says the Wall Street Journal, reflects the position the securities industry has taken in opposing such proposals. Previously, Mr. Nixon's press secretary said that the candidate would not comment on the mutual fund reform bill passed by the Senate, but passed over by the House Commerce Committee for need of grassroots support. That policy made sense in view of the fact that Richard Nixon has been a director of 4 mutual funds in which he owned no shares. Mr. Nixon resigned in February of 1967, preparatory to running for president. Asked whether Mr. Nixon's law firm, Nixon, Mudge, Rose, Guthrie, Alexander, and Mitchell, which is 33 partners, presently represent any mutual funds, a delightful partner, Mr. William Cannon told me, after I assured him that I had been born a Republican, that he was not aware that the firm represents any stock mutual funds, unquote. No banks or insurance companies are major clients and can change the complexion of the regulatory authority under which Wall Street has to live, then I have news for them. The SEC, like the Federal Reserve, is an agency set up to be independent of the executive branch of the government. True, the chairman of its 5 members is appointed by the president, but there is not scheduled to be a vacancy on this bipartisan commission, 3 of whom are Democrats and 2 Republicans, to change the balance until 1970. Since its creation in 1934, the commission has been repeatedly under attack, noted Fortune, the business-oriented publication which currently contains applause for the SEC. Its spunky chairman, Manuel Cohen, has said that the SEC's prime responsibility is to detect change and move with it. Mr. Nixon declares the free and healthy operation of the stock market is of utmost importance to the investor. Chances are, if Mr. Nixon wins, he will have to look to the SEC to keep it that way. Well, the French have a word for it. The more things change, the more they remain the same. This is Wilma Soss, spelled S-O-S-S. My pre-recorded views, as usual, are my own, and not necessarily those of the National Broadcasting Company nor the Federation of Women Shareholders in American Business.
Wilma Sauce and the Pocketbook Edition of the News is a regular feature and will be heard again next week. Monitor continues shortly with the award-winning show The World and Washington, produced by NBC News. It's a look at the U.S. role in world affairs. So stay tuned. This is Brad Crandall.
This is the NBC Radio Network. Sir Isaac Newton said, more or less, what goes up must come down. But in the world of Wall Street, that's not necessarily true. This is Ben Grauer. For an overall understanding of what's going up, coming down, and why, join me on Today's Business Trends, weeknights at 7:10, right here on WNBC. Fifty years ago, the majority of Americans looked upon the alcoholic as a person who lacked willpower. Today, alcoholism is recognized as a serious progressive illness. In New York State, alcoholism is recognized as a major health problem, and positive steps have been taken to deal with it, including the establishment of special treatment facilities. Write for the free booklet, Hospitalization for Alcoholism in New York State, New York State Department of Mental Hygiene, 44 Holland Avenue, Albany, 12208. Whether you're after the facts or before, you'll hear it on The Brad Crandall Show, weeknights, 9 to midnight, on WNBC, Radio 66 New York.